We're going to begin today's show by talking yet again with Cecily Seraski, the Deputy Director of Jewish Voice for Peace and the founder of Muzzle Watch, JVP's blog that documents efforts to silence open debate about Israel and Palestine policy. Welcome to Beyond the Pale again, Cecily.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
This is, of course, the second installment, I guess.
Installment of what we hope will be a regular monthly series of conversations. And, you know, in the past, we've talked a lot about the contrast between the relative openness of dissent and discussion in Israel over policy regarding Palestine and relations with the Arab and world and Iran and so on, compared to its being not at all open in the United States. But things are beginning to change in Israel as well. So I thought, Cecily, maybe one of the things we can talk about first is the report and the role of the Reut Institute.
Yeah, this is really interesting. They're one of Israel's most prestigious policy think tanks. They're independent, but they advise the government. And in fact, Avigdor Lieberman called the entire Israeli diplomatic corps back home a few weeks ago, where several things happened.
Lieberman, the foreign minister, extremely conservative foreign minister.
That's right. The foreign minister who of course, as many folks know or may not know, was a former nightclub bouncer. And that's relevant because I think his approach to diplomacy hasn't changed a lot. So he brought the whole diplomatic corps back to lecture and berate them and also to have them briefed from this report from the Reut Institute. And this is what's really interesting. The report essentially says something that folks like us have been saying for a long time. I mean, there's significant overlap, which is that we think about Israel's battles militarily, traditionally, and over its certainly changing borders. But there's another battleground that has become equally as important. And that, of course, is in the world of language, in the world of academia, culture, it's international, it's decentralized, and they actually have a term called hubs of delegitimacy, places like the Bay Area.
I found this to be a hilarious term, by the way.
We should talk. The whole thing is very funny. I think that it's a euphemism.
Beyond the Pale being like an outpost of one of the hubs of delegitimacy, no doubt.
I think what they would otherwise call us is enemy states, and the Bay Area is one of them. You guys are one of them. I mean, Toronto, London, etc. I mean, the whole thing is kind of fascinating. But what they're saying is that what's happening right now, in fact, we are seeing a shift in the balance of power from centralized, hierarchical, large institutional power to decentralized grassroots, non-hierarchical groups where effective people with blogs, people in church groups and temple, you know, rabbinical students, all sorts of things are happening. And so this report says, look, now you can't have Israeli military go to the UK without threat of being arrested. You have the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. You have a growing delegitimization happening. That's how they put it. I put it as delegitimization of inequality and repression. They see it as a threat to Israel's very existence. And I think this is a really important acknowledgement there in terms of how this battle is shifting, and it really does go to the power of the growing boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, because as we know, our state actors have failed us miserably in terms of demanding accountability. And so the Palestinians really have articulated and led this movement that says, okay, we're going to go around you. We're going to use our individual nonviolent power. And I think that's making a huge difference. And so one of the things we were going to talk about, for example, is a few cases where we have James Besser, who is the Washington correspondent for New York Jewish Week and also feeds a number of Jewish papers, writing a pretty amazing op-ed a couple days ago about silencing of dissent around Gaza in the United States, saying, Marilyn, exactly what you said. People can debate it in Israel, but here, what's going on with our institutional Jewish leadership that we can't? And he said the only question people ask is it justified or not? There's a moral defensiveness to it, but there's no space to debate whether or not it's even effective.
And let's just note that for this to appear in Jewish Week in particular is fairly remarkable, because Jewish Week is quite tied in with the American institutional Jewish community, even in terms of its funding, and tends to represent sort of the mainstream legitimized voices there. So for Besser to strike out on a limb there and to raise a voice of dissent is in that venue is fairly notable.
And the same thing happened with Letty Pogrebin, who used a phrase in Moment magazine, another mainstream respected Jewish magazine read by many, many people, and she used the frame the Israel right or wrong mafia, which is pretty potent stuff. Again, I think, Esther, what you're saying, where this is appearing. And this goes back to the Reut report and how people articulate the current battle, which is a battle around legitimacy, really. The battle of language is very, very important. And they talk about message creep, this idea that groups like Jewish federations in AIPAC are fighting. The most important thing they can do is fight the use of terms like apartheid, which once appeared on the margins and is now increasingly appearing in the center. Again, with Besser and these essays, McCarthyism, charges of McCarthyism appeared in the margins. Now they're appearing in the center. And people like us think this is excellent news. Why? Because this is about a reality-based conversation about Israeli policy. We haven't had one in the Jewish community. It has been a fantasy-based conversation. So we think that's great. But the Reut report and the Israeli government and the foreign minister, Avigdor Lieberman, thinks this is terrible news, the fact that these arguments are finding their way to the center, because what it does is deteriorate the sort of moral cover that Israel has for all of the things that it does that enables it to perpetuate occupation and these other things. So it's a really amazing time what's happening and what's shifting.
So one of the, I think, the funniest aspects of the Reut Institute report is its solution. It almost seems like they were reading the protocols of the Elders of Zion when they hatched this. And it is that Israel and its supporters have to develop close personal connections with the entire elite in business, politics, culture, science, academia. Apropos your point about power being a little less centralized these days, it seems like an odd solution.
It's hilarious. And that is how it's worked. I mean, I can tell you that, for instance, I mean, this is how it's traditionally worked. A concrete example. Henry Knorr was a reporter, actually a technology reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who mostly wrote about Apple software. But he did write a piece about an Intel factory that was built in a settlement. And when he did that, he the Israeli consul general here, now I talked to him and he went and tried to get them to comment. He did what any good journalist does. They refused to talk to him. But then what they were able to do, because they had those relationships, and because, again, what mattered was the centralized large media outlet, the San Francisco Chronicle at the time, the consul general was able to use that relationship to call the editors at the Chronicle and have Henry Knorr. Eventually, he was actually fired, and he says it was precisely because of that. We don't have all the evidence of that, but there's no doubt that that's part of what went on. So that's, I think, that recommendation of making friends with all of the elites is because you can use those personal relationships to get them to police for you and gatekeep for you, which is always how this works on Muzzle Watch. But, yeah, that's becoming less and I mean, it is funny, and it's less and less relevant. The other suggestions, by the way, they make are continue to promote brand Israel, which we know what a disaster that was in Toronto, where this city-to-city brand Israel, it's a project really out of the foreign ministry's office to say, you know, our problem, our answer isn't Hasbara, better PR. Now what we want to do is make people think of all the really cool, fun things about Israel, and essentially it's a kind of ethnic cleansing of Palestinians all over again. We just want them to forget the Palestinians and know the cool stuff. So that's one recommendation. Another one, which, of course, they've already done, is make people pay a price. And that will help us circle, of course, back to Avigdor Lieberman's new diplomatic strategy. And then finally, which actually brings up J Street, is very interesting, is they suggest that Israel deliberately drive a wedge between soft critics of Israel, being J Street being a perfect example of that, and hard critics of Israel, meaning anyone who supports boycott, divestment, and sanctions. What is that going to look like? What is that going to mean? We don't know. In some ways, that's already happening. So those are some of their recommendations.
And one of them is actually to caution that having peace between Israelis and Palestinians and having two states won't solve the problem either, right?
That's right. Yes, the entire diplomatic corps has been exposed to this thinking now, have been briefed on it, is this idea that folks like us really are out to destroy Israel no matter what. And once we get an end to the occupation and peace, or once we get equality, we're not going to stop. We will not stop until we destroy it. I honestly don't understand what that means. Obviously, there are extremists in, you know, all over the world who want to see Israel destroyed, whatever that means, and that's true. But this movement is absolutely driven by people concerned about human rights, Palestinians and others. All of the language is about that. So that's the other thing that I find really interesting, when you see people from the heart of the mainstream Jewish world openly asking questions about what's happening, is it inevitably leads them to much tougher questions about the role of systematic discrimination in Israel and other things.
We're talking with Cecily Saraski, the voice behind Muzzle Watch, the Jewish Voice for Peace blog that documents efforts to silence open debate about Israel-Palestine. One thing that's just happened, apropos of silencing dissent, is the arrest and effort to deport a Jewish American editor of an English language Palestinian paper, Ma'an, Jared Malson. What's happening there?
Yeah, it's so interesting, because one of the things that I love is that Jared Malson, the way he first came to Israel is through the Birthright program. And that's a program where young Jews all over the world get free trips to Israel and free tours to help solidify their connection to the area. And people are going there, and they are having their eyes open. And to me, he did something really remarkable and returned, as you said, as English language editor of Ma'an. But what's so a Palestinian paper, which, by the way, poignantly, I noticed the other day, you know, all papers have RSS feeds where you can get a feed just on their entertainment news or their international news. Ma'an has a feed just for detentions. That's how frequent detentions occur in the territories. So the immigration office in Israel was actually quite open when asked, why is he being detained? Because he actually wrote articles that were critical of Israel. That's what they said. It's stunning. Israelis who I'm very close to have said there isn't really a civil rights discourse in Israel the way that we understand it here. So free speech as we understand it, I mean, and this is increasingly deteriorating day by day. So what was his crime? They actually felt comfortable openly saying, you know, being critical. That is parallel to Avigdor Lieberman's treatment of the Turkish envoy. And in fact, the deputy foreign minister, they are saying that they now have a right to kick out any ambassador if their country is critical of them. Again, there is no understanding of, it seems like, sort of free speech and that open space, and now you have this bouncer school of diplomacy that's happening to make people pay a price for being critical of Israel diplomatically, individually, journalists, all of us. So I think when I say the power is shifting, we're in that transitional phase where they're understanding it, and we're going to see a lot more muzzling rather than less. We're seeing more detentions, more arrests there, and more attacks here, but it's because the power is shifting from underneath them. That's why it's happening.
And, of course, efforts to restrain the activities of the non-government organizations, the NGOs they don't like, who depend for their funding on foreign sources, and their efforts now to put a stranglehold on those foreign sources, at least for the ones that aren't supporting the settlers. Those apparently can continue doing business as usual.
Cecily, holding fundraisers in the Met Stadium.
Met Stadium, right. Cecily Saraski from Jewish Voice for Peace from Muzzle Watch, thanks so much once again for joining us, and we'll talk with you next month.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Be well.
Thanks, Cecily.